One more test, test, 1, 2, 3. I received a Swiss Army knife, a hatchet, and a wrist rocket, like a high-powered slingshot, the kind you could kill a small woodland creature with. I want to become the type of man who would live and frame his life in a way that others may live. Welcome to the Form for Good podcast, a framework for men in search of meaning. A little over a year ago, I was walking out of a grocery store and there were contractors outside attaching large sheets of plywood to the windows on the exterior of the building. And this was during the time in the city where I live where there was still a fair amount of protesting and rioting taking place among everything else going on in the world. And I passed a guy coming into the store and he looked at me and smiled and he asked how I was doing. And I immediately answered, "I'm just waiting for the meteor to strike." And obviously I was kidding, but there was a pretty solid thread of truth in that statement. The world is hurting right now. The world is a rough place. And this story that we live in is filled with conflict. And in some ways, this has always been the case. Ever since the fall, the story of human history, the story of humankind has involved pain. It's involved sickness and plagues and political corruption and wars. But it does feel like this time that we live in now, things are at a new level. The stakes have gone up. The tension has increased. It feels like there's a battle on every front. And it makes me think of a scene in one of my favorite movies called Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell. And there's a moment in the film where he's sitting in his apartment doing absolutely nothing, just staring at the Nature Channel. And this high-reach excavator with a grapple attachment comes crashing through the back wall of his apartment and just bites a huge chunk out of the wall and leaves this giant gaping hole. And the demolition crew had the wrong address and ended up starting to take down the building that he was in rather than the one next door. And it can kind of feel like that right now, like we're just waiting for something to come crashing through the wall. All this to say, there's more or less an endless supply of stress coming at us from multiple directions these days. And when human beings are faced with this type of situation, the natural response ends up going in one of two directions, either fight or flight. And that's common knowledge. That's something we're all aware of. But it's interesting to think about those reactions. Both of them actually have merit. There are moments when we do need to stand up and we need to resist and we need to fight and we need to offer strength. But there are also times when we need to retreat and to step back and to rest because we simply can't fight a battle on every front. The human soul wasn't meant to carry that type of weight. And I think what often happens is we tend to go further in one direction or the other to where it gets to be a bit extreme. And that becomes pretty unhealthy and even dangerous. If I'm constantly living with clenched fists and looking around at where's the next fight and who am I supposed to, you know, view as an enemy, and I'm always on guard, I'm always in combat mode, that eventually just wipes you out. That has the ability to destroy not only our own soul but our relationships. Now the other alternative, to go just into full-time hiding, is also not helpful. You know, just live with my fingers in my ears and sit on the couch and binge on Netflix. There's things, as I mentioned, that I am called to respond to, and there's problems that need solutions, and those things aren't going to be addressed when I'm just constantly living and hiding. C.S. Lewis is one of my favorite writers and thinkers of all time. And one of the themes you notice in his work is he talks often about war. And part of that, I think, is because he was a veteran in World War I, but he also did a lot of the creative content and genius that he offered to the world was being formed and taking shape during World War II. And there's a quote from Lewis. He was offering some thoughts on war in general, but he was giving the analogy of saving someone from drowning. And Lewis said, "The rescue of drowning men is then a duty worth dying for, but not worth living for." Again, it's this idea of when taken to an extreme in either direction, we simply lose, we lose our lives. We lose the point of living. And so I think the answer here is to find some type of balance, or a better word might be a healthy tension between these two. So landing somewhere between fight or flight, or being able to navigate how to toggle back and forth between those responses depending on the situation. So the question becomes, what does that look like? And I want to start by just offering a few examples of just some anecdotes from the past year or two. And these are things that at the time I didn't necessarily notice the connection, but as I look back and start to piece things together, I'm seeing a through line, and I'm seeing a pattern of something that I think could be really helpful in this conversation in terms of how we respond to these difficult times and the trials around us. And so I'm going to list these off, and then I'll try to put some thoughts to them. So the first picture, I'm at a trampoline park with my friend, and we brought our kids, and we're over in a section of the park where you can jump off of one of the trampolines into just a giant pit of these foam cubes, basically. It's just a pool of foam. And I'm actually immersed in the foam, holding my iPhone, taking some slow motion video of my friend doing front flips into the pit. And this is pretty impressive because we're both pushing our 40s, and we wanted some video evidence that we could impress our wives with when we went home. The second picture is I'm standing in the middle of the lake, actually not the middle of the lake, more close to shore. And by standing, I mean mostly falling into the water. But I had a chance to test out a paddleboard for the first time, and there was no one else around, and I was struggling to get balance and stay afloat. But those few moments where I was able to get some form of balance and stand up on top of this board, it was just an amazing feeling. It literally felt like you're walking on water. The third picture is at my sister-in-law's wedding, and my wife and I had helped out quite a bit throughout the day, and it was winding down to the point in the evening where people are starting to relax a little bit, and we stepped out on the dance floor together and had a few moments, maybe 2 or 3 minutes to dance, and there was two thoughts going through my mind. One was, my wife is more beautiful than the day that we danced at our wedding, and I'm not sure how that's possible. And the second was, why don't we dance more? Why has it been so long since I've asked my wife to dance? And then the final picture I want to give is takes place in our living room, and my wife and I and our kids are all sitting watching this YouTuber that we discovered, and he's got a watermelon set up on his table, and he's stretching rubber bands around the center of the watermelon, basically at the equator. And his goal is to see if he can get the watermelon to explode. And so he continues to add rubber band after rubber band. The tension is increasing. And finally, sure enough, this thing explodes, and the shrapnel that comes off of the watermelon actually knocks him off of his chair. And we're all just crying because we're laughing so hard. Now, as I offer these examples, I can sense that one possible reaction could be to listen to these things and think, it sounds a bit like escapism. It sounds like hiding in some ways, like one of the extremes I was suggesting that we should avoid. You know, I'm talking about watermelons exploding, and we all know that there's literal bombs exploding all over the world. And so in some ways, as I offer these things, it might on the surface feel a little bit trite, but I'd actually like to suggest that that isn't the case, that there's something very powerful here. And the connection between these situations that I described, and there's been many more that I've been paying attention to, the connection is the pursuit of joy. The pursuit of joy. Nehemiah 8:10 says that the joy of the Lord is our strength. I love to refer to Nehemiah as the rebuilder of walls. And Nehemiah said, the joy of the Lord is our strength. There is a direct connection between joy and strength. And I think it actually plays out in two ways. The first is that joy is actually a source of strength. Because the reality is we can't give what we don't have. We can't offer from an empty reservoir. And we need, our souls need to be revived and to be fed and to be filled. And one of the strongest agents of revival for the human soul is joy, is the pursuit of joy. So there's a piece of where joy offers this rest and this recovery that we need to be able to offer. But the other way that joy is connected to strength is the idea that joy is actually an act of strength. I actually believe that joy is a weapon against evil. There's a defiant nature to the idea of pursuing joy in the face of great trouble or trial or difficulty. it's like saying there's a peace, there are these things that I possess that have been given to me by God that the enemy cannot take away from me. So there's this defiance and this strength in choosing to pursue joy. One of my favorite movies is The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. And there's that climactic scene where the Grinch has just finished accomplishing his mission. He's gone under the cover of night throughout Whoville, and he's stolen the presents and the food out of the refrigerators and the ice boxes and every last light off of every tree. And he's made his way back up to the edge of this ridge overlooking the valley below. And behind him is the sleigh that's just filled with a mountain of the material goods that he has robbed these people of, and the stack is so high it defies physics. And he's looking down in the valley, and he's waiting with anticipation because his heart is pretty cold. It's pretty hard. And he's looking forward with a certain amount of pleasure to the sound of the children waking up to see that Christmas has been stolen, and then listening for their cries and their disappointment. But to his despair, as the people begin to wake up, as the Whos down in Whoville begin to rise that morning, he doesn't hear the sound of crying. There's a different sound coming from the valley, and it starts with a single voice, but eventually a choir of voices join in, and the Whos down in Whoville are singing. They're gathered around the tree in the middle of the village. They're holding hands, and they are celebrating and rejoicing and choosing joy despite what has been stolen from them or the attempt to steal from them. And initially, the Grinch is frustrated and upset by this, but as the music begins to make its way up the mountain and it reaches him, it is so impactful, it actually causes his heart to begin to grow. And this is what I mean when I say that joy, in a sense, is a weapon against evil. So here's my encouragement. As you look out at this world and everything that's going on, and you're trying to determine how to hold on to your heart and how to face these situations and offer what needs to be offered without just getting completely taken out, find an opportunity to do a front flip. Go out this summer and see if you can't walk on water. Grab your wife and decide to start dancing more. Pick up your kids. Bake banana bread, but don't use nutmeg because it'll completely ruin the recipe. You could even go and chop some wood. There's nothing quite like the feeling of a log splitting underneath the weight of an axe. The joy of the Lord is our strength. Joy is both a source of strength and it's an act of strength. And it's available to us. And if there is one thing among many that the world desperately needs right now, it is for us to recover our strength and to be able to offer it as needed.